Recording proof. Okay.
I'm Annie Reese. This is Politico Dispatch.
We're reaching a bit of a stasis here.
This is National Security Reporter Alex Ward.
We're nowhere near peace. We're nowhere near a military victory, which unfortunately means more devastation and destruction in the days ahead.
On today's show, it's now day 19 of Russia's war with Ukraine, where things might go next.
No, the U.S. isn't standing by. It could do more. Like, it just genuinely could. But the question is, are those risks worth it? For the moment, the Biden administration does not see that it would be worth it. And plus, you're also seeing Ukraine do well with what they have and the Russians struggle with what they have.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, things can change very quickly in these kinds of situations, which is why an emphasis on de-escalation and not ratcheting up tensions whenever possible.
So speaking of de-escalation, U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan is traveling to Rome today to talk with China's top diplomat about Russia. And last week I spoke with Phelim Kine, our China correspondent, about how Beijing had aligned itself with Moscow, much to the consternation of the Biden administration and the West. So what can you tell me about the talks that Sullivan is going to have?
So it seems like, as of now, it's going to be mostly, hey, China, do not help Russia survive the sanctions that we've put on. Do not be Russia's lifeline. And Russia thought at the beginning, though seems to have miscalculated now, that China could be the sort of backstop to all of the economic harm it was going to face.
Yeah.
That doesn't necessarily seem to be the case, but that's not stopping Moscow from asking. In fact, a U.S. official told me that Russia has asked China for military equipment and other support.
Wow.
In hopes of, you know, bolstering its chances in the Ukraine war and I guess its economy. I did not hear about economic support specifically, but that's what, you know, they've asked. And so it seems that Russia's kind of like, you know, throwing a bunch of lines out there and hoping they get a couple bites.
I mean, how likely is that to happen? I mean, if China were to give Russia military aid, that would dramatically change what we're seeing.
It could. I mean, usually we should note that it's Russia who gives military equipment to China. If, you know, and China has drones and other things it could provide the Russians, which in drones have proved effective on the battlefield already. But what it would really show is that China is going to be a more active party in this war than it has been, in somewhat the way the U.S. and NATO have been providing weapons through Poland, Romania into Ukraine for the Ukrainians to use against Russians. We could potentially see, if the Chinese agree to some sort of help, of them providing weaponry to the Russians to then use on the Ukrainian battlefield. But I want to be clear, we don't know the specifics of the request. We just know it's military equipment and other support. So, you know, we could be talking about drones, we could be talking about guns, we could be talking about helmets, we could be talking about semiconductors, we could be talking about checks. We're not exactly sure.
And how helpful for the U.S. is this meeting with Jake Sullivan likely to be? Like, how is it likely to actually make any sort of difference?
It's hard to know. I mean, the U.S. and China have had some pretty tense meetings in the first year or so of the Biden administration. You might recall the meeting in Anchorage, in which it was basically Tony Blinken, Jake Sullivan, and their Chinese counterparts sort of yelling at each other in front of cameras. So unclear if we're going to get, you know, any progress here. But I think what is clear is Sullivan is going to deliver that message to the Chinese. Do not help Russia evade sanctions. Do not help them in this war. You know, we're trying to isolate them. And if you help, you might also face some sort of punishments. Whether or not that works, you know, we'll wait to see.
So I want to go back in time for a second. To last week. This time last week, it looked increasingly likely that Poland was going to donate its MiG-29 fighter jets to Ukraine as long as the United States backfilled fighter jets. That deal fell apart last week, which you've been chronicling every day. So how did that blow up so spectacularly?
So it's a long story. I will do my best to make it short. But the short version here is that this was supposed to be a quiet deal made between the U.S. and Eastern European countries.
Mm-hmm.
The European Union's foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell, said it out in the open that that EU might be sending fighter jets. And then everyone was going, wait, what? This is going to be happening? This is quite an escalation. Yeah. So everyone was kind of freaking out about, wait, do we want to openly be seen as giving fighter jets? The U.S. did green light this deal, in the words of Secretary of State Antony Blinken, and we're working with Poland on the best way to make this deal happen, which, as you alluded to, Poland would send its MiG-29s to Ukraine. The U.S. would provide it F-16s as a backfill. But then Poland kind of out of nowhere was like, actually, America, we're going to give you control of these MiGs. We're going to send them to Ramstein Air Base in Germany, and then you can give them to the Ukrainian pilots. And that's when the U.S. was like, whoa. We don't want to be the middleman of this deal. Also, you didn't consult with us before offering this out into the world. And on top of that, we, the United States, we assess that sending these fighter jets will not tilt the military balance that much in Ukraine's favor, but the risk is going to escalate. Because Russia will be like, oh, look at NATO really sending fighter jets in this moment, really escalating their involvement, even though it's an open secret that we're providing anti-tank and anti-aircraft missiles and all kinds of things to Ukraine. So that's when the deal fell apart. How you see this outcome depends on how you feel about America's involvement so far. Do you think that, you know, it was a good idea for the U.S. not to escalate the situation, you know, between NATO, which is U.S.-led, and Russia, therefore two foremost nuclear powers, you know, not increasing tensions when they're already pretty sky high? So if that's the case, you're probably in favor of the U.S.-led caution here. Or do you see this as the U.S. being incredibly reluctant to wade deeper into this war other than providing, you know, many millions in weapon assistance? In this case, you could say that, of course, Ukraine could use the aircraft. Of course, it would help them. And if that's how you feel, then okay, then you think Biden's being a bit overly cautious, which there is a pattern of this administration fearing escalation. But again, how you see that depends on how you think of the general balance.
Yeah, definitely. And that's sort of something that's been an evolution, right? Like, it seemed like Republicans and Democrats had been relatively united, at least in Congress, for their support for how Biden was handling Russia's invasion of Ukraine, particularly over some of the more intense sanctions once those dropped. But now I feel like we're seeing a growing number of hawks wanting the White House to do more to aid Ukraine. So where is that pressure coming from?
Well, I think it is coming from the right and also, you know, Ukraine fans. There's a lot of people who have studied Ukraine for a long time, have a lot of contacts there. I'm sure their friends are in a lot of trouble and they, you know, desperately want the U.S. to do whatever it can to help. So that's part of it. But a lot of, as you mentioned, are coming from Republicans. That letter of 42 Senate Republicans, basically, I mean, I've read the letter. It basically says, hey, Biden, you know, don't stop these planes from getting sent to Ukraine. I have to say, Poland could send the planes if it wanted to. It doesn't need America, right? It could just send the planes. I'm not saying it would be easy. I'm not even saying it would be, you know, a good thing to do. I'm just saying that it that Poland does not need America for this deal. But of course, with the U.S. coming out against the idea, it makes it a lot harder. So I guess what you're sort of seeing in this moment is this belief that the administration's doing a lot, has done a lot, but could do more. And that the reluctance to provide fighter jets, to get even deeper involved. You've even seen some Democrats, Congressman Tom Malinowski, he said on a podcast not too long ago that the U.S. should start considering putting troops in Western Ukraine.
Wow.
So, like, this is starting to change a little bit. There's a bit more pressure coming on. And, of course, it's been 2 weeks of horrifying images and coming out of Ukraine. Of course, people want to do something, but as the Biden administration continues to say, they fear, and the president directly fears, and has said so on multiple occasions, that an escalation in which you could have the U.S. and Russian shooting directly at each other could lead to World War III. That is just something that they're very concerned about, you know, at this point in the conflict, and they do not want to do anything to risk that possibility.
And one thing that was interesting that I've noticed in some of your reporting is that it seems like Biden has really gotten the Pentagon that he wanted. They didn't complain openly during the pullout from Afghanistan, and they're not really itching for a fight in Ukraine.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to remember recent, you know, White House Pentagon history, especially during 20 years of war in Afghanistan and Iraq. It was, generally speaking, Bush, Obama, Trump, and then the early part of Biden, kind of going, hey, Mr. President, we should stay in Afghanistan. We could do more in Iraq. You know, we shouldn't pull our troops out. Victory's around the corner. Again, I'm being very general here, and this does not apply to everyone in the Pentagon. But there was always this fight, and Biden remembers very clearly the early part of the Obama years where, you know, Obama was considering, do I send more troops to Afghanistan as part of a surge to win that war. And then a bunch of leaks just started coming out in the press very clearly from the Pentagon about assessments and what they felt they needed and like troop levels. And so then if the U.S. didn't meet that number, the U.S. would be providing less than sort of expected. And Biden remembers that lesson and has basically, you know, talked about how he felt Obama and his administration got boxed in by the Pentagon. And this was something that Biden did not want to happen on his watch. And now there are very few leaks, as far as I've seen, coming out of the Pentagon going, you know, the U.S. could do more militarily on this. So all this to say, it feels like Biden got the Pentagon that he wanted. He wanted a compliant, maybe too strong, but one that wouldn't be a political adversary as they're making decisions of war and peace. And so far, you know, a year plus in the administration, in key moments, we have seen, you know, Biden's bet pay off.
All right. And finally, what are you looking at in the week ahead?
So I think first thing to look for is, you know, does China actually end up helping Russia, right? Or will Sullivan's warnings actually keep the Chinese at bay? Granted, the Chinese could be helping the Russians secretly, but, you know, are there going to be any overt shows of support? You know, that's something we got to look for. The other thing we've got to look for is, you know, roughly around the 3-week mark of a war is when militaries need to sort of take a strategic pause for resupply and just logistics. And that's what we're going to be reaching towards the end of this week. And the Russians are already struggling with the first 2 weeks of this fight, right? I mean, yes, they're making some progress, much more in the south and a little bit in the east, not as much in Kyiv, although they are moving closer. So they've made some progress, but can they survive this strategic pause now? That's also helpful for the Ukrainians, right? Because maybe, I'm not saying the missiles are going to stop flying and there won't be an end to fighting, but usually it's a sort of cyclical down period, let's say. And maybe the Ukrainians can find a way to bolster their own defenses and get more help. And frankly, if the Ukrainians can make it to that point, then it shows what sort of a long slog we're going to be witnessing in Ukraine.
Alex Ward, it's always good to talk to you. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Also in the news, a rift between Walt Disney Company and Florida's Republican leaders escalated on Friday when Disney pledged to stop donating to political campaigns in the state over the controversial legislation branded the Don't Say Gay Bill. This is the most substantial pushback Florida has faced over the bill. And on Sunday, Pfizer's chief executive said that another COVID-19 booster shot would be necessary. The FDA has not yet determined whether to recommend a fourth dose to the American public. Today's episode of Politico Dispatch included music composed by the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. Be sure to follow Politico Dispatch if you haven't yet, and if you can, leave us a rating and review. It helps more people find the show. I'm Annie Reese. Thanks so much for listening.